Issues, Etc., regular guest Pastor Stephen Parks on why your congregation should join the Issues, Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues, Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues, Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues, Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues, Etc. The Issues, Etc. 300.
This bill, for the first time in 30 years, allows for the taxpayer funding of abortions.
When Christians say, I'm not going to get involved in those things, what we've done, we have now not only abdicated responsibility, but we have absolutely given confirmation to the utter destruction of everything we're afraid to touch.
Today we are celebrating the birth of our Prophet Muhammad, who was born on this day. It's a great day of the Muslim world. The Prophet gave us this religion, which is a religion of peace.
It's true that he was a violent man. In fact, he was, if you will say, the first Muslim terrorist.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
Well, by now we know her by her own self-description, Jihad Jane. Colleen LaRose apparently involved in a number of plots, not only to fund terrorism internationally, but also to support terrorist acts and even perhaps partake in some terrorist acts, some jihad of her own. A lot of questions remain after the arrest of Jihad Jane. One of them I'm interested in is the fact that she was a secret Muslim. She did not let anyone, even those closest to her, even her boyfriend living with her, know that she had Islamic affiliations and leanings. We're going to be talking about Jihad Jane for the first few minutes of Issues, Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Monday afternoon, March the 15th. We'll spend the first segment of today's show talking with Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch about Jihad Jane. Then we'll spend the rest of today's program discussing a radio and TV advertising campaign launched by the Archdiocese of Boston, urging Catholics to return to confession. Now, this is a good thing to do, although we will have to sort out the wheat from the chaff when it comes to what the Bible really teaches about confession and absolution. Dr. Scott Murray of Memorial Lutheran Church in Houston, Texas, will be our guest. Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch. He's a columnist for Human Events and Front Page magazine. He's author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. Robert, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Todd, thank you. Always good to be here.
The news accounts say that Colleen LaRose, Jihad Jane, was in fact a secret Muslim. She didn't tell anyone of her Islamic leanings. Is this a new tactic on the part of Islamic extremism?
Yeah, it might well be. It's actually something that they have discussed openly for some years. Al-Qaeda has announced its intentions, not announced them to the outside world, but announced in internal communications that have been monitored and captured, its intentions to recruit white, non-Arab Westerners who they could then prepare to launch jihad attacks. And they would Al-Qaeda would assume that such people would be able to evade scrutiny that would come to more ethnic types. Now, of course, I know that with the great fear of ethnic and racial profiling in this country, it was unlikely that they were really going to have that kind of advantage. But nonetheless, that does indicate that Jihad Jane's tactic here is something that Al-Qaeda has been working on and contemplating for some time.
What was her basic plan, as far as we can tell?
Well, it seems as if she was involved in a plot that not coincidentally also included quite a number of other converts to Islam, and they were going to kill the Swedish cartoonist Lars Vilks, who made a cartoon of Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, as a dog a few years back. And, of course, Islam forbids representational art and also forbids depiction of Muhammad, and above all forbids mockery of Muhammad and Islam. And so that's why the cartoonist is being targeted in this way.
It's difficult for us to understand the outrage that someone like Colleen LaRose felt. The news accounts talk about these kind of things really spurring her enthusiasm for martyrdom, for helping her compatriots both in the United States and overseas. Why does the depiction, I mean, other than the prohibitions that you just mentioned, why does the depiction of Muhammad in any way so outrage Muslims?
Well, above all, it's the idea of insult. In Islamic law, the non-Muslim is supposed to be subservient to Islam and to respect Islam to the extent that no kind of criticism is allowed, and certainly no mockery is allowed. And so it enrages them above all, not even so much the fact that there is representation, because actually in Islamic tradition there is representational art of Muhammad, but it is a very different kind of thing because it's done by Muslims. The thing that really enrages them in this case is that this is representational art done by non-Muslims and done in a mocking manner.
Talk about the use of the internet. In this case, I think the press is hinting at some use of YouTube and of other internet resources and avenues for radical Islam.
Well, yeah, Jihad Jane was a heavy internet presence on YouTube and so on in the comment fields defending jihadis and attacking people who were working against them. And so actually she came to the notice of some anti-jihad bloggers, notably the Jawa Report people there who wrote and knew her. And they were not in the least surprised when she ended up arrested in this. This is the way that she learned Islam. She learned it online, and it just shows that there is no effective response that self-proclaimed moderate Muslims have to the jihadist imperative, which is presented all over the internet and is presented in a way that converts to Islam like Jihad Jane are susceptible to it.
Another part of this story is her ability to travel abroad, especially when she was already, I believe, on FBI watch lists here in the United States. And this kind of comes at a time when other failures to note people's radical affiliations in Islam here in the United States. We've already had a couple examples of that in the last calendar year. What is missing here in our ability to both identify and track radical Muslims in the United States?
Well, I think one of the main things is that we don't know what's going on in the mosques. We aren't monitoring the mosques, and we aren't doing so out of the politically correct assumption that, well, it's just a church, it's just a house of worship, and so there's really nothing to be concerned about, when in reality the problem is that in mosques all over the country, as has been shown in several surveys during the first decade of the century, there is a widespread tendency to practice, to preach, that is, hatred of Jews and Christians and the necessity ultimately to replace replace the U.S. Constitution with Islamic law. And consequently, the idea that that we should leave mosques alone and not monitor them, and especially when this is done in the context of federal government agencies and law enforcement agencies working with groups like the Council on American Islamic Relations that are essentially jihad groups, pro-jihad groups, it's kind of ridiculous and self-defeating. This is an extraordinary mistake and comes from false assumptions, particularly those based on the idea that Islam is a religion of peace that has been hijacked by a tiny minority of extremists.
So what do you suggest by way of monitoring mosques in the U.S. or in Western Europe? How would you envision that actually taking place, especially in the context of free exercise of religion?
Well, there's nothing, I think, that interferes with free exercise of religion to have people there paying attention. And, you know, if it were in my church that people were plotting seditious activity and violence against Americans, I would be the first to invite in the FBI guys and say, you know, tape record everything. Let's get these guys out of here. Let's catch them. There have been informants who have gone into mosques and then have reported back to the FBI. And the American Muslim advocacy groups have been in an uproar about that. But there's nothing illegal, unconstitutional, or interfering with the free exercise of religion to have an informant in the mosques. And the only reason why they're upset is because ultimately they are on the side of the jihadis, and they have opposed every attempt to impede jihadist efforts over the years. And so we need to start speaking honestly about this and to call upon American Muslim advocacy groups to cooperate fully, honestly, openly, and transparently with law enforcement efforts, and to allow in people who are going to be paying attention to what's going on, investigating what's going on. We would ask nothing less of churches or synagogues if the threat were there. And we need to lay aside the political correctness and to call upon people to do that. The Constitution that is Muslim groups to do that. The Constitution guarantees the free exercise of religion, but it does not guarantee you some sort of an all-purpose cloak in order to perpetrate sedition under the guise of free exercise of religion. And there has been legislation in the past that restricts the free exercise of religion when it's been considered to be against the national interest, and is not that legislation has never been deemed unconstitutional, most notably the prohibition of Mormon polygamy at the end of the 19th century. And so that sets a precedent that we ought to use here. This is a national security issue, and we need to study the sedition laws and study what is going on in the mosques and make sure that there is not plotting against the U.S. Constitution and against American citizens in them, and do what's necessary to make sure that that's not happening.
With only about 30 seconds here, Robert, what's the lesson to be learned from the arrest of Jihad Jain?
Well, there are many, and one is that this is not a racial issue, as is often portrayed by Islamic advocacy groups. It's an issue of an ideology that people of any race can hold, and so we need to be attacking this on the ideological level and not be hamstrung or cowed by cries of racism, which are utterly spurious and are designed to prevent us from reacting adequately to this threat. We need to brush all that aside and do what we have to do to defend this nation.
Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch, a columnist for Human Events and Front Page magazine, author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. You can purchase that book, The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran, at our website, issuesetc.org. Robert, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Well, when we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time talking in the latter part of this hour about a radio and television campaign, an ad campaign, if you will, launched by the Catholic Archdiocese of Boston, trying to bring Catholics back to confession. The rate of active participation in that sacrament in the Roman Catholic Church is very low. When we come back, we'll talk about that ad, and we'll talk about what the Bible really teaches about confession and absolution. Dr. Scott Murray will be our guest.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. issuesetc.org. Stay connected. issuesetc.org.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
Often imitated, never equaled. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're interested in hanging around with a bunch of powerful men that further one another's careers, I guess you could meet Fred and Barney down at the Loyal Order of Water Buffalo. Stress is your problem, and those 40, 50 hours a week are killing you, and that cubicle's driving you nuts. Perhaps you should buy Joel Osteen's book and read it. If you're interested in Lutheran doctrine and practice and how we can spread that to our communities, check us out, Brothers of John the Steadfast, www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Here's a great resource for Sunday school teachers. Mondays, we interview Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House about the upcoming Growing in Christ Sunday school lesson. You'll find these interviews under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Listen to a 20-minute interview with Pam Nielsen, and you'll be prepared to teach Sunday school this weekend. issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and look for teaching a Sunday school lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen.